Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, by the ninth inning, we knew it was going to be either the most exciting win of the season or the most frustrating loss, and it turned out to be the latter, unfortunately. We have a lot to talk about Dave Roberts' decisions and some player execution things. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening right now. And that way you'll never miss a day because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, my name is Jeff Snyder. That is Vince Samperio. And Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans just like you are. We've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room. So we're not quite insiders, which is probably a good thing. But we bring you the smart fans perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. So again, please subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. And let's talk about the Dodgers. Vince, this game on Thursday night? I told you guys yesterday, I don't know what day it is ever. I think it was Thursday night last night, and now it's Friday morning. It was definitely the most exciting, if I don't know if exciting is the right word, most action-packed game of the season. And I tweeted out when Will Smith walked to load the bases in the bottom of the ninth inning with nobody out, Dodgers down by two, I tweeted, this is either going to be the most exciting win of the season so far or the most frustrating loss. And it turned out to be that frustrating loss. The Dodgers came back from down 7-1 to tie it up and then ultimately lost the game. And I don't know, what was the feeling in the stadium, Vince?
I mean, the stadium, it got dead a little bit, and then the Dodgers started creeping back. And honestly, it was, of all the games I've been to, probably the best atmosphere overall. Obviously, hyped by the fact that the Dodgers came back down from seven. But it was one of those where I was texting my brother, and I said, if they don't take the lead here, the Phillies are for sure scoring one, and we might end up losing. And unfortunately, they ended up scoring two, and the Dodgers ended up losing. So it was, I saw a lot of tweets about it, comparing it to Lakers season for those that are also Laker fans that listen to this podcast. And Lakers were always like down by 20 and then got it within like 3-4 or ended up tying it last season and then still ended up losing. It felt like that, especially coming off the game on Wednesday where they came back and then lost it. So back-to-back games with similar feelings. But the crowd was great, and unfortunately the Dodgers just couldn't put it away.
Yeah, and this game, more than most so far this season, brought out some of the Dave Roberts criticism. And, some of it was warranted, I think. And so I did have somebody tell me on Twitter, he's looking forward to see how I defend my boy Dave Roberts on tomorrow's podcast. And, again, I am not Dave Roberts' defense attorney. I'm just a simple podcaster, and I will admit that, yes, I do think the guy with the best winning percentage in managerial history is probably a pretty okay manager, but my approach has always been, when I think he messed up, I criticize him, and when I don't, I don't. And it's pretty easy to figure out. You don't have to agree with me, but that's my approach. And so there were several decisions and non-decisions made in this game that I think are at least worth discussion. And Vince, I figure we just go chronologically through the game with those decisions, and that kind of tells our game story, and we can kind of dig into it that way. And the first one is Tyler Anderson did not have it, but he went six innings, and looking and seeing the Dodgers ended up scoring seven runs, it's easy to look back and think, well, if they had pulled Anderson after four runs and got some relievers in there and held the Phillies to five or six, then the Dodgers win this game. I don't know. For me, Vince, the nature of the current stretch they're going through, they needed six innings from Tyler Anderson. And Anderson even said after the game, he went out knowing he was going to have to give six innings because the Dodgers bullpen is overworked and there's no respite in sight. And so for me, that seemed like Yeah, pretty much a no-brainer decision.
Yeah, I didn't have an issue with that, especially going into the game. You know, Robert said that he needed length at Vander Shane, and that's what they were looking for. So, you know, I didn't think that giving up, you know, seven runs type of leash, but that's what it ended up being. And Anderson wasn't great, but it wasn't like everything didn't come in bunches. He gave up a couple home runs. He gave up, you know, some other runs here and there, but it wasn't like he got bombarded in one big inning or something like that. His pitch count was relatively low because they were hitting the ball early in the count. So, you know, it was one of those where first game of a four-game series that's in the midst of 31 games in 30 days with a bullpen that's had to throw some extra innings the last few games. I was fine with it, especially against a guy like Zach Wheeler. Realistically, you get Wheeler versus Anderson, and you think, okay, if we're going to lose a game this series, that might be the game. So just a combination of all those factors, yeah, I'm the same with you. I was fine with it.
Yeah, and, you know, we say the 31 games in 30 days, and that's true, but this part of the stretch is even worse because it's what? There was three against the Cubs, three against the Pirates, and then four each with the Phillies and the D-backs, so that is a 14. That's 14 games in 12 days because there's two doubleheaders in there with no days off. And so this, even of the 31 games in 30 days, this 14 games in 12 days is the killer part of that bigger killer stretch. And so, yeah, they needed that length from Anderson. And really that was the only debatable or decision until things got interesting. Basically, most of the game, it looked like, oh, well, Tyler Anderson, you got to wear this loss, take the L, we'll come back, get them tomorrow. And then the Dodgers offense had different ideas. Let's take a quick break because once we dig into that eighth inning, there are a lot of decisions there. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. And keep it Locked On Dodgers to hear us talk about that eighth inning. Let's talk about Built Bar. I got a package today, and my son said, "Hey, Dad, your Built Bars are here." And I thought, I didn't order any Built Bars. What's this Built Bar thing? Because I do order a lot of Built Bars, but sometimes, because we advertise for them on the show, Built Bar just sends me stuff. And that was the case today. They sent me a box of Built Birthday Cake Puffs. I'm going to read you this description for them. Imagine dipping your finger into that plastic tub of birthday cake frosting and then opening your eyes and realizing it was only 150 calories and 16 grams of protein. That's what it's like to eat a birthday cake puff from Built. Yeah, I mean, these things are really good. The birthday cake Built Bar that they had a couple years ago was a limited time. It was my son's favorite one. It's so good. It's like white chocolate, and this tastes a lot like that, but it's a Built puff, so it's like the marshmallow on the inside. It's like a white chocolate, tastes like birthday cake frosting on the outside. It even has sprinkles like a birthday cake, and they're good. If you haven't tried the puffs yet, they are a delicious little snack, and it really does have the texture of a marshmallow and tastes so good. And like I said, it's somehow good for you. I don't understand it. It's alchemy. It's magic. It's wizardry. They learned it at Hogwarts. Whatever it is, they're delicious, and they're good for you, all covered in real chocolate. And, of course, the Built Bars themselves, too, are all covered in chocolate and healthy for you and delicious too. So whatever you want to order, go get some birthday cake puffs because they are really good. But whatever you order, go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. All right, we are back. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. For your next listen, maybe check out the Locked On Now podcast. There's recaps of MLB games with analysis from our local experts. Taking fans through the season like no other network. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, so we get into the eighth inning. The Dodgers had come back a little bit. They had pulled within 7-3 at this point. Cody Bellinger hit a home run off Zach Wheeler. We'll talk maybe let's talk a little bit about Cody real quick before we dig into that eighth inning. Cody hit a home run on a high fastball from Zach Wheeler. He now has 5 career hits off Wheeler. All 5 of them are home runs. He also later made contact with some high fastballs from Corey Knebel. Do you think, Vince, this was just a fluke game, or do you think Cody is figuring something out about the high fastball?
It's hard because every time we think one of these games is going to become something, it doesn't end up doing it. Bellinger's had some like one-offs against high fastballs. The one you remember probably the most is the one from the playoffs last year against the Braves. I want to hope that it is. I want to say that, you know, Bellinger had that stretch where he was hot for a while, then he kind of cooled off. But for the most part, his swing has looked kind of back to normal, where he's just probably going to have these streaks here and there where he gets hot and get and isn't hot. But I do think it's one of those where, you know, it might be a matter of him knowing or having the scouting report that they are going to film that and he can look for it. And if you can cheat on a high fastball, you can win hitting the high fastball, assuming, you know, they leave it a little bit of a mistake, maybe inside the zone. But yeah, I don't know. I think Bellinger's at in a pretty good spot right now. Sometimes the results don't quite bear it, but he's been barreling the ball pretty hard recently. He had that one in the game before against the Pirates that rocketed off the second baseman. He almost hit another home run off Wheeler in the game. So I think he's just seen the ball well, and I think you know, the high fastball is part of it.
Yeah, it maybe came back to bite him later, because realistically, those high fastballs that he fouled off from Corey Knebel, if he had instead not swung at those, he would have walked and scored a run instead of flying out and not scoring a run. But, you know, yeah, we'll take a Cody who can hit the high fastball. So now let's jump into the eighth inning. The Dodgers scored four runs, and kind of the first, I'm just going to go in order of the decision. You know, we've talked in the past about how there's very few right or wrong managerial decisions. And really what that means is the ones we think about, there's plenty of right decisions and wrong decisions. You know, if you start Clayton Kershaw as your DH batting cleanup, that's the wrong decision. That's why he doesn't do that. If you start with a top three of Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and Trey Turner, yeah, most teams would kill to have that. Yeah, we'll call that the right decision, even if it doesn't work out. But the decisions we think about, those ones usually come down to like a 60-40 decision, and a manager's job is to, more often than not, pick the option that gives his team has a 60% chance of success over a 40% chance. And so the first move there was pinch hitting for Edwin Rios with Justin Turner. There was a left-handed pitcher on the mound, and big situation, runners on base. That you had Turner on the bench. The only we just talked yesterday. I said I don't want Edwin Rios batting against lefties very often, and they had left Rios in to face a lefty in the sixth inning, I think it was. And I think that was because they knew that that spot would come up in the order again, and it might be a right-hander in, and they'd want Edwin Rios. But when it was a lefty again, it made sense. The only reason I could think of that it wouldn't have made sense is Girardi could have made the decision to take Alvarado out. Alvarado had faced his three batters by that point, so they could have pinch hit for Rios, and then Girardi brings in a right-hander. But for me, Justin Turner isn't really a downgrade there. He hits righties just fine. So seems like a pretty clear, you know, that's probably a 70-30 decision with 70% going the direction Roberts did, right?
Yeah. I guess the only quibble you could have with it too is at this point, Turner isn't hitting well enough to justify, like, you know, it's not a like no brain decision to have him bat. And Rios is probably seeing the ball a little bit better than Turner in terms of not swinging. Alvarado wasn't the most accurate pitcher that inning, but it ended up working out. And, you know, realistically, that's a spot that Turner should be hitting in anyways.
Yeah, and I don't know that Rios is seeing the ball very well against lefties. In his at-bat in the sixth inning, he struck out, and the pitch he swung and missed at for strike three was nowhere near the strike zone. So, yeah, all right, so we'll give Roberts credit on that one. So JT hits it's a double. Then
barely a double.
Barely a double. It was weird. Like, he thought it was a double right off the bat, and just put his head down and started jogging towards second. And then Schwarber actually took a good route to the ball and got there quickly. And JT ended up having to hustle to get to second. Once he got to second, they didn't pinch run for him. And they did eventually pinch run for him once he got to third. But that's the next decision I want to talk about. Do you pinch run for Justin Turner once he's on second, knowing he's representing the go-ahead run, right? Yeah, he was the go-ahead run. And so do you pinch run for him immediately once he's on second and in scoring position? The guy they ended up running for him with was Austin Barnes, and that's really the only option they had as far as position players. We did see Walker Buehler last year a couple times pinch run, I think, for Albert Pujols probably. And Justin Turner, unfortunately, is – pretty a lot closer to Albert Pujols than he is to Trey Turner when it comes to speed. So would you have run for Turner when he was on second? Would you have used Barnes or would you have used Buehler or somebody else?
I would have used somebody just because, you know, realistically, if Turner's not going to stay in the game, then, you know, you use a pinch runner right away. Now, if there was a thought of him staying, because it was at the DH position, so realistically, he could have stayed in the game. But at that point, you know, a base hit puts you in the lead, and you're playing for that one run, and they did end up getting that base hit. I don't know if Barnes scores, but at least Dino probably has a little bit more of thought about it. Then you're putting Schwarber like in the hot seat right there, trying to throw home. So, I mean, I can understand leaving Turner in because you think you might need his bat later if the game does extend, but also, you know, it doesn't look as great when you take him. Like, it didn't quite go once you get to 30, took him out. And that was so he could have scored on a sac fly, but I don't know. I'm not going to fault him for that one, but I do think I wouldn't have had any issues if he did pinch run right away.
Yeah. And, and that kind of leads us into our next three decisions that all came within a span of about 30 seconds of each other. The first one is pinch hitting for Gavin Lux with Hanser Alberto. It was a left-handed pitcher in the game. Alberto hits lefties very well, but they knew that as soon as they sent Alberto up to the plate, Girardi would bring in the right-handed pitcher. And so for me, the thing I think about is I don't think it's a given that Girardi wouldn't have changed pitchers even if they hadn't pinch hit. Alvarado was at 23 pitches. His season high is 24. And so he was already basically at his limit. So I think even if they sent Gavin Lux up there, there's a decent chance that Girardi changes pitchers anyway. And at that point, you'd rather have Lux against a righty than Alberto against a righty. And, you know, so I don't know. What do you have any quibbles with the decision to hit for Lux?
The main reason I see Alberto getting in that spot no matter what is that he is known as a contact hitter. Yeah, he doesn't hit as well against right-handers. But even then, in his career, he has 760 plate appearances against righties, only 78 strikeouts. You do need, you know, the ball put in play to give yourself a good chance of scoring, whether it's a fly ball, whether, you know, even a weak ground ball. I don't know if they're playing in at that point. But I can see it. But Lux has been, you know, a little bit better recently. It's one of those other ones that's a little bit of a toss up. But getting into the next one, if you put Hanser Alberto in to do what he did with him, then I don't agree with it in general.
Yeah. I mean, and that does lead us into the next decision, actually, the next two decisions, which was to have Hanser Alberto try to do a safety squeeze. And then to have him do it again on the second pitch once the element of surprise was gone. And like you said, if that was your goal, if we're coming up here to bunt, you know, that makes me even more in favor. I mean, Alberto is a good bunter.
And it was a good bunt if it would happen on the first time.
Yeah, on the first pitch, if he gets that down, I think they probably score. I do think Austin Barnes probably didn't execute the safety squeeze very well. I don't think he got, you know, and JT Realmuto is a very good catcher. And so if Alberto does miss the bunt, you don't want to be in a position where you get caught in a pickoff. But I would rather put my faith in Alberto to at least foul the bunt off than put yourself in a position to get thrown out by 10 feet on a perfectly executed safety squeeze bunt. And so the fact that Alberto got a good bunt down and a bad defensive first baseman still was able to make a play that had Barnes out by 10 feet means it's some combination of probably not the right call and not great execution by Barnes. And like you said, Alberto actually, he actually has a better strikeout rate against right-handed pitchers than lefties. Even though he hits lefties better, he strikes out more against lefties too. The flip side of that is contact also means possibility of a double play. And so what I would have liked to have seen would be Alberto swinging away and maybe even Chris Taylor going on the pitch from first to second, you know, put some pressure on the defense. Realmuto is very good, but you know, if they're all there, there's a lot going on there. I think Taylor can maybe steal second and that takes away the double play. And then you can trust Alberto to try to get you a sac fly or something.
Yeah. And Robert said after the game that he felt Alberto executed well, which he did. And then he said that Rhys Hoskins had a perfect flip home. I mean, realistically, Rhys Hoskins had time to kind of pick up the ball and toss it with his other hand if he really wanted to. Or, you know, it wasn't a matter of he needed like a perfect glove flip and everything had to go right in order for them to get Barnes out. Barnes was out by a pretty big margin. He didn't really have any secondary. That's why, you know, it's one of those where at that point, you, I don't know, maybe you try the suicide squeeze and then you're going to have Taylor on second at the very least, maybe third if things go crazy with the suicide squeeze. But I just think at that point, although it's one of those things, you know, momentum might not be a real thing. You might not believe in it, but it was one of those things where everything was building up. And if it's not a suicide squeeze there, then you let the guy hit and see what happens, because the Dodgers were on a roll. The crowd was into it. And then that kind of deflated the sales a little bit.
Yeah. Hoskins did have a perfect flip, but that play didn't need a perfect flip. Exactly. Yeah. It's I don't know. Like, I don't hate it, especially in theory. I like the idea of bunting for a run. I will always trade an out for a run, but it's got to be executed better. And for me, once Alberto fouled the first one off, you got to scrap that and go to plan B and say, okay, we're going for a sac fly now instead. All right, so we've got maybe the I don't know, they're all big decisions, but we got one more to talk about, and that is the decision of who pitched the top of the ninth. So we're going to come back and do that in just a second. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning, and please keep it Locked On Dodgers. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, so we're back, and one more big decision to talk about, and that is after the Dodgers had tied the game up in the bottom of the seventh or bottom of the eighth inning. We didn't even mention the big hit from Chris Taylor, which maybe deserves to be talked about. Chris Taylor has been struggling very, very badly, as we talked about on yesterday's episode. He had a couple hits, including a very big base hit in that inning. He hit the one that Justin should have scored on, right?
Yeah.
Or that somebody else might have scored on. So a big hit to tie the game from Chris Taylor. It was a good game from Taylor, and good to see him putting the bat on the ball. Even the out he made in the ninth inning, he put the bat on the ball, and that's an improvement over what we've been seeing. So hopefully those are signs that he is going to break out of this very, very bad slump he's been in.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, that's what you think. And Taylor's a guy that has been streaky in the past, and it's one of those where all it takes is one hit for him. Realistically, I trust in him more than I trust in maybe some other guys to get it going. Like, one good game can get him going. I do think Taylor's one of those guys. And even in the last inning, I mean, at least he didn't strike out at the end of the game. He, in the last inning, he made contact. So, you know, we'll take the baby steps, and they came with a game-time single. So that works out.
Yep. And that brings us to the top of the ninth inning, the decision that Dave Roberts made to go with Daniel Hudson over Craig Kimbrell. And, I want to read Dave Roberts' quote. He says, "I just felt that in that inning, by the book, it's the closer at home in a tie game. I just felt that part of the order, we could get Huddy through their 8 and 9 hitters. I felt good about him versus Hoskins and Bohm. Gets the first guy, and there's a bunt single from Herrera, pinch hitter. We had a ground ball double play, but then he ended up deflecting it, and then it just led to the walk and then obviously the sac fly. I was going to have Kimbrell for the heart of the order, so that was kind of my thought, and obviously it didn't work out." And, you know, it's Dave Roberts acknowledges the book, the, you know, quote unquote, the book says, use your closer in the ninth inning if it's a tie game at home, because at that point, there's not going to be a save situation tonight. Either you are going to lose or you're going to win on a walk-off. Either way, there won't be a save situation, so you use your closer. Roberts is saying, he went to matchups. And in the ninth inning, it was the bottom of the order. And if it had gotten to the 10th inning, it would have been, you know, the Bryce Harper part of the order, basically. And so, I mean, Dave Roberts didn't say Bryce Harper's name, but what he was saying was, I wanted Craig Kimbrell to face Bryce Harper in the 10th inning. Problem was, Bryce Harper ended up coming up in the ninth inning because Daniel Hudson didn't get the job done. And like Robert said, he very easily could have, you know, after the bunt single, he got a double play grounder. Unfortunately, his glove got in the way. If his glove doesn't touch that ball, that's a double play. The inning is over. And everybody, you know, the worst thing we're saying is, well, I don't know if I agree with the decision to go with Hudson over Kimbrel, but you can't argue with the results, you know. And instead, the results didn't turn out well, and it was a little bit of dumb luck. And obviously then, you know, some he tried too hard, spiked the slider, whatever, for the wild pitch. But, yeah, just I don't know. I go back and forth on what I think about this decision to go with Hudson over Kimbrel.
In theory, you know, his decision makes sense the way he explained it. But in practice, not so much, only for the fact that Kimbrel hasn't pitched in 5 days. So if it doesn't work out exactly how it did, now he hasn't pitched in 6 days. Daniel Hudson pitched the night before or the day before. And, you know, we've seen Dodgers pitchers struggle a little bit in back-to-backs, at least, you know, at least what I remember. The numbers might not bear that out, but I want to say I remember guys recently not pitching well in back-to-backs. And it's one of those where I don't like playing for the 10th inning when you can do it in the 9th inning, when you, like, can win it in the 9th. Let's just say, you know, and Kimbrel could have came in and gave up runs. We don't know that. But you give Kimbrel the chance to get you to the 9th inning, and I do think the Dodgers would have took a chance with Trey Turner on one of those two fly balls if they were chasing one, and or if they were tied, actually. So yeah, that's where it comes in for me, where Hudson on a back-to-back, Kimbrel hasn't pitched in 5 days, go with Kimbrel, and then, you know, if you get to – at that point, you're almost lucky. You know, it's not – I don't want to play more victory game, but at that point, you're almost lucky to be in the position you're at. Go for the kill. Go for the win.
Yeah, and I firmly believe the Dodgers would have gotten at least one run in somehow if it had been a tie game. Once you got basically nobody out, it's a totally different game, knowing we need one run to win this game rather than we need two to even tie it. You know, I have to think, just knowing Dave Roberts, I feel like there's probably some element of – because it was Hudson who blew the game the day before, I'm sure there was some element of let's get him back out on that horse, you know, and building his confidence. And you know, the fact is the Dodgers are going to need some of these relievers to go on back-to-backs in the postseason. And Dave Roberts has always been a guy who has kind of looked forward to the postseason, even in mid-May, saying, okay, you know, if Hudson can get out there, build up his confidence and you know, get us through this and get a win, after blowing the game yesterday, that's going to be good for him in the long run. Unfortunately, it didn't work. Hudson's quote after the game, he said, it's a pretty terrible feeling. The boys battled back the last 2 days, and both times it was me who gave it up afterwards. And, you know, so he owned it. It's, you know, ultimately it comes down to pitchers executing. And the Dodgers have a bullpen full of guys who they trust, who they expect to throw a scoreless inning. And so, while, yes, I think I agree that it should have been Kimbrel in the ninth inning, but it's not like it was – not like they went with a position player pitching. You know, Daniel Hudson most of the time is going to get you a scoreless inning. And I think Dave Roberts' justification is – it's at least defensible. You know, it at first blush, this looks like, what are you doing not throwing your closer here? It's like an 80-20 decision and you went with the 20. Realistically, I think it's more like a 60-40 and you went with the 40, which is still not as good as going with the 60. But, you know, I've always said, and when people accuse Dave Roberts of being too much of a get out of the spreadsheets nerd, I'm always like, the main decisions he makes that I disagree with are when he doesn't go with the data. You know, and he said, the book says you go with your closer there. And I don't think you should always go with the book just because the book says it. But in this case, there's a reason the book says it. Your closer is your best reliever most of the time. If your closer is not your best reliever, you know, that's one thing. But Craig Kimbrel is probably the Dodgers' best relief pitcher. And so you go with your closer there, because if you don't get to the 10th inning, then you saved him for nothing. And that's the way it is. And with this offense, there was a very good chance the Dodgers were going to score in the bottom of the ninth. And so go with Kimbrel. Just go with the book. Go with the easy answer. Because sometimes the easy answer is right.
Yeah, and the other part, too, is extra innings this year are almost a coin flip at this point with that ghost runner on second, or whatever you want to call the runner on second. And Kimbrel, has been a strikeout guy in the past, but I don't think he's necessarily made to be a strikeout guy this season. So even if you get to Kimbrel on the 10th, runner on second, realistically, the way he's been pitching, you know, he might give up the run just on a ground ball and a fly ball, and you can't really do anything about it. So I think at this point and for the rest of this season, it's going to be kind of one of those where if it's me managing, I'm playing for the win in the ninth. And then if you get to the 10th, it's one of those where it's kind of a toss up and you don't know what's going to happen anyways. But I do think, like I said, in theory, what he says makes sense. But just coming off of back to back, Kimbrel not pitching in 5 days, I think that kind of swings it in the other way for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Kimbrel's workload is probably the tiebreaker for me. Like you're looking for reasons to get Kimbrel in a game at this point. And this was a really good reason. If the book says to put him in and you're desperate to find a way to get him in, just put him in. And in extra innings, like you said, you want your best strikeout pitcher, not necessarily your best pitcher, guy with the best chance of getting strikeouts, because that's important in extras. Anyway, that's the game. The Dodgers lost. It was a frustrating loss. Ultimately, my last question for you, Vince, is, do you think there's some benefit to a game like this? The Dodgers showing, hey, we scored 6 runs. We came back and tied it, even though they ultimately lost. For me, I feel like this is a better loss than just losing 7-1.
Yeah, and simply for the fact that we haven't, you know, they haven't been down that often in general. They haven't been down by more than a few runs this year in general. And it's one of those where, you know, they were dead in the water. It was 7-1 in the seventh inning before they ended up putting 2 on the board. They were pretty dead in the water. And even with the Phillies bullpen not being as good, it just seemed like one of those roll over and die type of games. And you know, realistically, that would have that probably what's what it was on track for until the Phillies did Phillies thing. So, yeah, I like the fight, and I do think, you know, hopefully Roberts can learn from stuff, and next time there's similar situations, he'll think a little bit differently or say, hey, you know, at least put another thought in his mind, like, okay, last time I did this, didn't work out. Doesn't necessarily mean I need to go away from what I did, but, you know, there's also a flip side to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, it's just one loss. The Dodgers have now lost 2 in a row. Hopefully today they can avoid their first 3-game losing streak of the season. Hopefully they can bounce back. And, you know, they almost won the game that was Tyler Anderson against Zach Wheeler. And so you like their chances in the rest of the series because it was their worst against the Phillies' best. And going forward, it's not. And so hopefully they can bounce back and win the next 3 of this series and move on. But you have anything else before we wrap this up, Vince?
I do not.
Thank you all for joining us on this very second-guessy episode of Locked On Dodgers. You know, hopefully, if nothing else, we've established that, you know what, there's questionable, but, you know, I don't think there are very many that were obviously, definitely, for sure wrong. And he also made some good decisions. And if I sound like a defense attorney, that's simply because I do think Dave Roberts is a pretty good manager. And tonight was not the best example of that, probably. So thanks for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. For your next listen, maybe check out Locked On MLB, where Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, brings you his unique perspective on the major leagues past and present. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. You can follow Vince on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I am on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. We love hearing from you whenever you have questions, comments, whatever it is. You can also email us if you want to. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com, or you can send us a text message or a voicemail to 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Have a good one.